let me just say that everybody has healing to do. It might not be, you know, the healing might not look the same, the hurts might not be the same, but everybody has healing to do.
We are the guardians of girlhood, paired with multi-generational perspectives. And when we say every girl has a story, what do we mean? The girl searching for her people, the girl craving an outlet, the girl with big dreams but no idea where to start. What about the girl whose father is in prison? The girl who hides in the bathroom at lunch? The girl desperate for a break from her home, even just for a moment? By opening up and sharing these experiences, we not only empower ourselves, but also inspire others. Unconditional sisterhood, unwavering community, and the realness. We express, we create, then we elevate. This is Love Girls, the podcast.
Everybody, this is Kayla Babers, and I'm here with my lovely sister, Jasmine Babers Gunn. And you are joining us for another episode of Love Girls, the podcast. On this episode, we will be talking about trauma bonds, shadow work, and why Black girls need therapy. In this episode, we explore the importance of mental health for Black girls and women, focusing on the unique value of therapy. We'll be joined by a licensed therapist, my soror and line sister, Dr. Tiffany Stoner Harris, who specializes in working with Black women and teens to provide expert insights on these critical topics. Alongside our expert guest, our teen co-hosts will share their own thoughts and questions, making this an open and intergenerational conversation about healing and self-care. We'll also discuss how to find therapists who understand the unique experiences of Black communities, and our guests will provide actionable advice for teens and young adults who may be curious but unsure where to start.
Yay, I'm excited. There's a lot of deltas in the room. I'm feeling lonely, but we're so excited to have you, Dr. Stoner Harris. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we also have another special guest calling in. Her name is Natalie Alexander. She is a part of Love Girls Magazine in Memphis. She was the grand prize winner of the Love Girls Magazine essay contest, and she's here with us today to join in the conversation. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. We are so happy to have you. We are also joined by one of our teen hosts. Dariana Harrison is here today. Say hey.
Hey.
Do you have anything else to say? How are you feeling? Are you excited about this episode?
Well, therapy is also one of the things I am in. I've been in therapy for about 8 years now. Trauma is also a big one for me because trauma is also like a thing that I have been dealing with since I was 8 years old. So, I mean, I'm here just to give advice.
Mm-hmm. And talk about your experience, huh?
Yep.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for being honest.
Let's jump right in. To start off, as you all know, I love to scroll TikTok. And when I have a moment, when I need to decompress, TikTok is my go-to. So recently, I'm on TikTok, and I don't know, Jazz, or anybody else, if you've seen this trauma candy salad. Mm-hmm. And it's friends and people, and they come together, and they get a bowl, and they bring all these variety of candies. And as they are dropping the candies into the bowl, they are saying very traumatic things, mm-hmm. like abuse, sexual assault, infidelity, domestic violence. They're talking about all these things while doing it for millions of viewers. And in the midst of it all, they're laughing. And when I was looking and doing some research for this podcast, I find it interesting how dark humor is incorporated into our everyday life and how we essentially push through trauma instead of breaking it down. And I know trauma affects everybody differently. Dr. Tiffany Stoner Harris, I'm interested on your thoughts of what happens when we just laugh away trauma, or we do things like go online and make a joke of it, of these serious things that are happening to us and we're dealing with.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you all for having me today. I appreciate being invited into the space to talk about such serious issues. When people don't have healthy ways of coping with trauma, they tend to draw
from what they know. And so being able to kind of disconnect from the trauma and use jokes or use, you know, humor as a way to push through, as you say. Dissociation is another thing that happens. You know, people disconnect from the trauma in a way as if it doesn't even exist. And so for some people engaging in an activity like you described, their engagement is, you know, it shows up in a way as if they don't care, but it's really that they have suppressed that trauma and disconnected from that trauma in a way to where it isn't at the forefront.
Do you find that that kind of unhealthy coping mechanism, generationally, we've just learned to suppress trauma as a way of coping? And how do we unlearn that as a family unit and as a community?
Both areas need healing. When we think about and talk about the Black community, when we think about enslavement, I think we can't talk about trauma without going back as far as the days of enslavement and thinking about the fact that people who were enslaved weren't allowed to think about their emotions or their feelings or their thoughts. It was, you know, strictly physical, and that was it. Could they physically perform? And so that mindset carried over, you know, the colonizer's mindset of these people cannot feel, they can't think, all they can do is work. That becomes how we parent, how we partner, you know, and so that carries over into families, and ultimately that carries over into communities as we all, you know, engage with one another. And so, you know, first step is acknowledgement. You know, we don't even really talk about how enslavement has impacted, you know, our current generations. Any of us in this space right now can probably go back, I would say, 4 to 5 generations, maybe 6 for some people, and there we are. We're looking at people who have been enslaved in our families and who didn't have the capacity to worry about how they felt or what they were thinking or what their mental health looked like. And so it really does require us to dig deep, you know, and be willing to share some of those things. Like, it's a learned behavior. You know, we've learned through the generations in our family to not talk about those harder feelings, to not talk about those traumas, to not talk about depression, anxiety, all the things. We can unlearn those things just like they were learned and, you know, passed on.
I agree. And it's really hard to watch. I have friends, and I have a lot of male friends, some married, some with kids. And almost all of my Black male friends are in therapy. And on the flip side, none of my Black female friends are in therapy, because I think as Black women, we often suppress our mental health issues differently. I saw a study on how we cope by achieving. So we're going back to school, we're starting a business, we're giving back to our community, we're volunteering, we're taking on, we have a full-time job and we're working 2 part-time jobs, we're sitting on boards, we're doing all these things to mask what we're internally struggling with. I broke up with my therapist because I told her she didn't know what she was talking about, but she in fact did. I learned that very quickly. Having somebody to talk to that isn't connected to you, yes, who is essentially unbiased, it helps in a way. And you're also not trauma dumping and overwhelming your friends and family with your problems and issues. Because I faced that in friendships too. And I feel like energy is transferable. You're just going to burn out your friends. So I think having a therapist that you can confide in is something that everybody of any color, any gender should look into.
I would love to talk a little bit more about some of the misconceptions around therapy. I also myself have been in therapy several times in my life for a multitude of reasons. I'm somebody who used therapy in like very like specific circumstances. Like I've never like gone to therapy consistently. I would love to hear, Natalie, from you and just a little bit more about yourself in general. We know that you are a senior in Memphis, and we know that you are a exceptional, really gifted writer. If you could talk a little bit more about your story and maybe your experience with therapy, we would love to hear it.
So I have actually attended PWIs since I was 3 years old.
And so I've always kind of been in a situation where I was the minority and I didn't really feel like I had people that could relate to me on different things.
Can you explain, can you explain to our listeners what is a PWI, just for those who don't know?
Yes. So PWI stands for predominantly white institution. So I go to a school where the majority of the people there are Caucasian, and African Americans are in the lower minority. Usually when people are younger, they're not really looking at what makes you different, but like what's making you the same. But as I got older and I started tuning in to just more like global issues and honestly looking into what made me different from everyone else in my classes, it became harder for me to just kind of brush things off and not talk to anyone. It was difficult because I didn't really want to go to my friends about different things because I knew they wouldn't understand. And for me, what I did in the moment, because I'm usually the type of person where when I go through different things, I don't like to initially go and talk to people about it. I just want to process it a little bit first. And so what I'll do is I'll write things down. And so in the story that I actually wrote for Love Girls magazine, I talked about how I dealt with a lot of things in my middle school career, racial related, and then also just other things as well that I didn't feel comfortable talking to anyone about at the time. And I would just write to myself. I'd journal. I'd write letters that I never sent to anyone just to help me cope and process before I could ultimately go and seek some help or talk to some people that I thought would be able to maybe not understand completely what I'm going through, but kind of help give me some next steps on how to cope with what I've been going through.
Dr. Tiffany, is it okay if I call you that?
Dr. Tiffany? It is.
Okay,
it
good.
Is. Yes.
Dr. Tiffany, you talked a little bit about how it's so important for us to unlearn. And Natalie was talking about like letter writing and things like that. One, I would just love to hear what unlearning looks like when you're in therapy, but also like if there's anything that we can do if we aren't in therapy or we don't have access to therapy to start unlearning specific things that we do in specific traumas. And also Natalie mentioned like letter writing. Is there anything like that, tangible things that we can do alone or in our free time to help us start coping?
Yeah, so I really like hearing Natalie talk about letter writing. So I'm a big proponent of journaling. You know, I encourage clients to just free write. It doesn't have to have the structure of, you know, grammar, punctuation, just write what comes to mind. Sometimes it's just externalizing it, getting it out. You know, if you just sit in that when you feel that emotion and get it out, you know, sometimes it brings some of those unconscious things to a conscious state where you can acknowledge it and then have the wherewithal to even begin to work through it. So, you know, when we talk about trauma and we talk about dissociation and disconnect, we've often, again, suppressed or forgotten, you know, truly forgotten some of the hardships, some of the things that have happened. Narrative therapy is one of the things that, you know, one of the practices that I use with clients. And so, you know, with children, younger children, that can be drawing. That can be drawing a picture, telling their story through a picture. That is a way for someone to, again, not hold all of that in. Because when you hold it in, you're holding not just what happened, the event, you're holding in the feelings, you're holding in the thoughts, all of it. And that is in your body. And it ultimately affects, you know, it can affect your health, you know, mental health, physical health, finding safe people who, you know, whether that's a school counselor, you know, if you're someone that's still in school or even in college, you know, a young person, finding safe people. And I would typically encourage young people to seek out adults, not other peers, you know, because peers, everyone is learning and growing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody might be coming to the table with some trauma. Mm-hmm. And so if we're, quote unquote, you know, I know this is something the kids, younger people say today, trauma dumping. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're trauma dumping on our friends, none of us may be healing in the right ways. And so it is important, I would say, to seek out a trusted adult. And it may not be a clinician to start out with. It may be, again, you know, a teacher, school counselor, somebody else in the school that can maybe help connect you
two resources if that's what you're needing. Some young people like music. I encourage people, I'd say, you know, what is a song that relates to what you're feeling right now? How can that help you share what you're, what you've experienced or what you're feeling in the moment? How can that help you share that with someone if you don't have the words, you know? Because sometimes it is hard for young people to sit down and tell somebody, like, this is what I'm experiencing or this is what I feel. And so, you know, you can use a song to help you do that. I also say, you know, sometimes like what Natalie was talking about, the letter writing, you can write a letter if you feel you've been harmed by someone specifically, but you maybe can't say it to that person in the moment, or maybe that person is deceased, or, you know, maybe for whatever reason, it doesn't work to say it to that person. You can always write the letter and you don't have to give it to them. Like, that's your way to cope and work through whatever is coming up for you. I also say, if you're not comfortable keeping it, destroy it. Like, write it, read it, reread it for yourself, and then get rid of it. Tear it up, burn it, whatever, to get rid of it. But it gives you the opportunity to acknowledge, validate it for yourself, or in the meantime, or in between the time that you are able to get into professional services, if that's what you decide to do.
For a coping skill, I do listen to music. That's one of the things I do. Raw Wave is one of the people who I connect with, because people say that, oh, he's hurt, or he's depressed, or this and that. Well, actually, I feel like his music is very relatable. Like, one of his songs are Abandoned. I listen to that a lot because sometimes I do feel abandoned. I also watch Disney. Disney takes me away from my reality. Mm-hmm. So I watch movies a lot, because trauma is, like you said, is a big deal. And I don't like talking to people about it, because what can they do? They can't change the past. They can't go say, oh, well, this is what happened, now we're going to do this and that. They can't do that. So I just feel like, yes, I have a therapist, Kelly. We talks all the time. I tell her about what's going on with me. But at the end of the day, in my head, I'm like, she can't change it. She can't go in the past and, like, be like, okay, I'm going to change this for Dariana. No, all she can do is just give me advice about it. Some people, I tell them about my triggers and my trauma, and I feel like some people don't care. Or they don't show that they care. And I remove myself from the people. Mm-hmm. Or I try to remove myself from the people. Because at the end of the day, if you care, you know you will show it. And I just don't want to build more trauma to my previous trauma, if that makes sense.
We have a pop-up special guest. Delasia was in the room, and she would really like to participate in the conversation. So come on, girl.
Yes, so as Dariana was talking about her coping mechanisms, I was like, thinking, because I feel like I don't like bringing negativity to my friendships, like, even if it's real. Like, one of my friends told me, she was like, I feel like you're not, like, actually being real with us and stuff like that, because I like to present myself in, like, a positive way. Is that unhealthy to not share what you're going through to your friends and people close to you?
I wouldn't say it's unhealthy. I would say you want a balance with friendships. And so you want to be able to trust those people who you're friends with and be able to share some of those things that, you know, might be challenging for you in life. But again, I would encourage young people not to use their friends as their sole source of, like, you know, on your healing journey. It is important. There's a reason why there's a mental health field, why there's counselors, therapists, professionals, you know, to help you through that. However, that doesn't mean that, you know, you shouldn't be able to or feel comfortable talking with your friends about some things. You have to gauge what that is, though. So I'm a believer, friends serve different purposes. Let mm-hmm. me just say
that. Different friends for different things.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if there are friends that you don't feel as authentic, you know, if you don't feel as comfortable being your most authentic self around, you know, that's something for you to determine. Like, nobody can tell you, you know, how you have to engage in friendships. And so that is something for you and those friends to discuss, and you determine what that looks like for you. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just say that everybody has healing to do. It might not be, you know, the healing might not look the same. The hurts might not be the same, but everybody has healing to do.
So what does disassociating, what do those symptoms of trauma look like?
Self-hate that can come with lack of self-esteem, that could come with, you know, some people can engage in unhealthy behaviors, whether that's sexually acting out, physically acting out, fighting, increased rates of depression, anxiety, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, a number of different things we might see. To your point, Sora, Kayla, we might see people overworking, like totally staying engaged in things to so that, you know, and again, this could be an unconscious, you know, unconscious behavior. I don't have to think about the trauma. I don't have to think about the unhealed parts if I'm constantly busy and doing things. And so it can look a number of different ways.
For me to, like, not think about my trauma or what I've, like, gone through, I stay on my phone. I either FaceTime one of my friends or I be on TikTok or I watch movies. That's what keeps me, like, not thinking about what happened or what I did. Because last week I got in trouble at school. And this whole Monday through Friday, I was just thinking, like, what could I have done differently? What about this? What about that? And I feel like some people belittle my people or my age group, belittle us. And it makes it feel like, okay, we can't do this or we're not able to do this. And I just feel like that's a part of my trauma too. Some kids my age, we don't go to adults because we feel like adults will push us or say, depression is for this person, or depression, because when I went to my mom when I was younger and I said, Mom, I feel like I'm a little depressed. Oh, depression is for white people. I'm like, oh, okay. She like, well, what are you depressed about? So I just feel like, what can adults help us or younger kids my age group try to figure out, like, can we come to y'all? Is it safe for us to come to y'all about our trauma, what we're going through?
There are differences in generations in how we cope and how we function and how we work on healing from something. And so I think I think about trauma and we talk about family healing. So to your point, you can't necessarily expect children, young people to work on healing without that system working on healing. Like, young people are a part of a system, a part of a family. And so when young people come to counseling, I also work with the family, because one person is like a symptom of a family problem, you know. And we tend to, in families, point to the one person that's their behavior, their outward, are causing quote-unquote problems. Yet, again, that person is like the representative of the family problem. And so I encourage families to, everyone to do some kind of healing, some kind of counseling. It doesn't necessarily have to be counseling, but some kind of healing. But it might also be, you know, there's one person in counseling and then we give homework for that person to take back with the family. But that would mean the family has to cooperate with that person. So again, it isn't just one person learning how to do things different, how to function different, how to talk about, how to communicate different, how to express themselves, their needs different. It's everyone in the family learning how to do that together.
I want to take it back to you because I'm really curious about your experiences when it comes to, like, trauma bonds. Delasia mentioned that it was hard for her to talk to her friends about really hard, sort of sensitive topics that were happening in her life. And Dariana brought up the fact that it was hard for her to express how she was feeling to adults. And she was wondering how adults could better themselves and be more helpful. I'm wondering if you've ever felt pressure to be, like, the strong one.
So I can definitely agree with both of them. I've been honestly in both of those situations before, because I can definitely relate in the sense that in my friend group, I tend to be the positive one, the one that gives people advice about their problems, but usually not the person seeking the advice, because people kind of assume that things are always good with me because of the whole idea of, if you're smiling, then you're probably happy and things are going well for you. And I guess for me, it kind of goes back to the whole being in that white space and not really feeling like some of my struggles are things that people can relate to me on. And so for those situations specifically, that's why journaling has been so helpful, because I can get those feelings out of my mind. When it comes to talking to adults, it can kind of worry me at times, because I do feel like a lot of adults will invalidate your feelings. And I've had conversations with, you know, older people that have said specifically regarding the African-American community, saying that, well, in generations past, we've honestly gone through so much more than what you all are going through right now. But it seems like more young people are trying to seek counseling or therapy. And I'm just confused on why, if you all haven't gone through as much as we have, why you're voicing all of these concerns. And so I just feel like, because of what she said that one time, this has kind of shaped how I go about talking to different adults about things, because I am concerned that when I do bring up those feelings, that they're going to say something to me that kind of invalidates how I'm feeling and making me feel like, well, I guess what I'm going through isn't as bad as it could be, so I shouldn't be feeling how I do. It's a completely different time period with the influence of social media and technology. And so we're going through completely different mental health struggles. Trying to hold all those feelings in and never consulting anyone definitely isn't the healthiest option. But I do think it is like a two-way situation, and that if I'm feeling comfortable enough to voice those opinions to an adult, it should be something that's reciprocated so that I can feel like I'm being heard.
Final piece of advice, or sort of like your push to get people interested in therapy who may need that help, or who might be feeling a little bit anxious about going for the first time or going back again, what would you say to them?
I would say, you know, especially because some people experience therapy or counseling and may not have the best experience and decide that they won't go back again, I would say remain open to the process. It's just like when you are going to find a doctor for your physical care. If you have a doctor and you're not pleased with how they're treating your physical ailments, you will switch doctors and you'll go look for another doctor. I would encourage, you know, young people to do the same when it comes to counseling. If you, you know, have a counselor and it doesn't feel like a good fit, keep looking, you know, keep looking for a counselor. There are resources out there. Psychology Today, you can filter that system and you can find, if you want a Black counselor, you know, if you're, you know, a Black girl or Black woman and you want a Black counselor, you can filter that resource and look for that counselor that you want. You also, with your insurances, you can ask your insurances to filter and send you via email counselors that are African-American, Black, however you know, are describing that counselor. They will do that for you as well. And trust the process. Trust the process. It might feel uneasy in the beginning because it's not what we're used to. You know, we're not used to going in and telling someone the things that, you know, we've suppressed and haven't talked about for our, you know, that impacts our life. But also, we're not used to going and telling people family stuff. You know, we tend to, in our community, what happens in this house stays in this house. You know, don't go out there telling people our business. We have to take control of our own healing. And when we go to counseling, we're not going to tell people our business. We're going because we want to heal.
Basically, my takeaway is trust the process. It's not a one and done. Right. And I'm assuming healing isn't linear.
Oh.
It's going to be up and down and around.
Yes. And lifelong. Yes. I always say healing is a lifelong process. So when you're healing, you might learn coping skills that help you get through the hurt. So let's just say, you know, whatever the hurt is, you've worked on it, you feel better, and you feel better for 2 years, and then suddenly something happens and you feel like you've been triggered and it's come up again. Well, you should be able to heal, to work through that quicker than you were like 2 years ago, because your healing
is continuous and it's moving along. And so your coping skills have improved to the point where you can overcome something in an easier way.
To Natalie's point, make sure that you're checking on your strong friends, checking on your positive friends. We are all in this together, so we have to take care of each other. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Love Girls, the podcast. Have the best day.